You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine, proud to bring you a new episode of our podcast. This time, it's another behind-the-scenes listen to what's happening in our Transform Masters program, enabling you guys out there in real estate businesses of your own to learn along with our Super Six and our Lucky Six. Our week two mentor was new CEO of the agency, Matt LaHood, who has very quickly built an attraction culture in that business. Our 12 Transformers asked him a heap of tricky questions about things like how to run the perfect sales meeting to keep everyone engaged, how to manage that fine line between leadership and friendship, what to do about salespeople using different CRMs, how available leaders should be, and why he personally doesn't have a desk, and so much more. And the good news is he answered all of them. The Transform Masters group took away so many tips from Matt in this session. It is well worth the hour or so listen from one of the industry's most recognized and most successful leaders. Enjoy the session with Matt.
Transform Masters 2017 is brought to you by Elite Agent with thanks to Property Tree, realestate.com.au and Real Plus.
Okay, so firstly, Matt, tell us what your thoughts are about culture in a real estate business.
For me personally, thinking about it, I mean, look, it all starts at the top. I've got a sort of mantra that everyone keeps the culture. So, you set the sort of focus on, I always set it in terms of as a group goal as to how we want things to work out in terms of team rules, etc. Then building that culture, everyone's responsible for it. Everyone's the keeper of culture. So it's not the principal, it's not the sales manager, it's everybody right down to even when I walk into the office, the front office concierge, we call them in our group, that might be a receptionist in the old terms or front office manager. Their job is the culture, you know. It's often the person that sort of remembers birthdays and that type of thing that leads a lot of the strong culture.
Okay, so what are your non-negotiables in terms of culture in both sales and property management?
In the sales arena specifically, one thing is, you know, if we meet any clients out in the marketplace that we know are dealing with each other, we have a sort of protocol to immediately call from an open home. If we meet someone that's dealing with somebody else from the team, we'd normally have a culture within to ring up that agent and actually get that client on the phone to them straight away. That's something that's probably not done in the marketplace. So if we're doing it open and you meet a client that is dealing with one of your colleagues, we have a protocol that is we don't negotiate on that. We promote the other person straight away in terms of if you're dealing with Sam, we say, fantastic, Sam's a great agent, I'm going to get her on the phone now. That's been something that's really been important. Another thing I've really sort of focused on the last couple of years around non-negotiables is just everybody really sharing information. Now, that's buyer information, seller information. At sales meetings, our sales meetings are extremely transparent down to the level of, what pipelines we're working on, you know, what properties coming on the market, the name of the buyers we're working on. This applies to PM too, you know, if you're a new business in property management or whatever, just the transparency builds culture. That's one thing I've really found strongly. And they're not negotiables around sharing buyer inquiry. If you're working with buyers, putting buyers into a generic, you know, buyer database, that type of thing, being very crystal clear on what an owner wants to take for a property, not having any smokes and mirrors around what an owner's reserve is going to be. We discuss reserves openly way before the auctions. Things like any for the property management team here on the call, like anything to do with what an owner will take as their bottom line, how much interest in the property, what we think we can get for it, yeah, that type of thing. So the more transparency with each other around the group and more transparency with the managers, one thing I've got from a cultural point of view, I don't keep anything secret from our team. If there's a challenge, I tell them straight away. If there's good news, I tell them straight away. If there's bad news, I tell them straight away. I don't believe in holding anything back. The culture does start from the top, but it's really the keeper of culture are the every single person in the office. In terms of accounts teams, one thing we do with our sales meetings, which is brilliant for our culture, is everybody is in the sales meeting. So we have accounts, we have settlements, we have whoever it may be. I actually get our concierge to come in, like our front office manager, to come into the sales meeting. So we've got, you know, these days we've got wireless Bluetooth headsets and things, and sales meetings are usually early for us, so it's not usually a lot of clients sort of floating around the office. So I get everyone to be part of the equation. I think it's really critical. I'm not sure if everyone does that in their team or whatever, and how big your teams are, etc. But that's something that's really important, not negotiable. Everyone attends. With sales meetings, it's always hard to attend for some people because they've got drop-offs, pick-offs. I'm flexible on those sorts of things. But in terms of everybody that's in the team and available, you must come along and join in.
Okay, so flexibility is one of those things that's really important to most people these days, particularly people with families. Is that side of things and making sure people are looked after in your business important to you?
Oh, 100%. It's probably one of, I think, the biggest things I'm focused on. I think what's helped me too, I'm a father. So I've got two kids, 19 and 17, and I've watched how difficult it can be for my wife and myself and everyone to sort of fit in that lifestyle. And at the end of the day, I just find, like, you know, no one's less committed because they got family. We're all about family, you know. I think that some of the most committed people I've seen are people that have got kids because, you know, they have to be highly organised. They've been through the process of what it takes to lead. They're actually good leaders because they're leading other people. It's one of the things I actually say to people when I'm interviewing them, recruiting them, I want them to have lifestyle, not just about whether it's females. Like, a lot of males are very involved now with the kids as well. So it doesn't matter for me. I don't discriminate either or. Like, if a father's looking, wants to do drop-off in the morning or and come in late, I'm extremely flexible. And I'm excited that we've got a lifestyle and our business allows us to do that. Because if you're working for Sydney Electricity, you're sort of very hard to do a job like that and go and be flexible. Like, we're very lucky in our industry. You take an hour in the morning, you can pick it up in the afternoon. Doesn't really matter. Yeah, but that's a big cultural thing, being able to be flexible in today's workplace. My whole model and the whole agency model is built on flex. A lot of our people work from home. They don't actually come into the office. That's the flexibility we have. Because the reality is, if you look at it, if you think of how many clients come into your actual office these days, whether it's purchasers or vendors, it's totally different. And the reason we used to have offices years ago was because tenants used to come in and pay rent, right? They used to come in and actually pay cash. You guys are all too young to remember this. But when I first started 30 years ago, I remember on a Saturday, there used to be 30 to 40 people queued out my front door. And I was a junior burger then, collecting rents. That was my role. And we used to literally take $30,000 on a Saturday cash, and we'd have to go and put it in the night safe. That's why you had an office, so people could come. Today, the offices are built really for us.
Okay, so in the case of employees working from home, how do you maintain culture given the physical distance of those employees from the office?
We dock in with the sales meetings. They're often popping in, like, to do things. Like, they might come in between open homes or things like that, but their base is basically a lot of them are working from home. So culturally, the sales meeting has a lot to do with it. So you're getting together every week. So you're just realigning that sort of teamwork, in a sense. And the sharing of, like, because everything's on email today, so when we do an exchange or anything like that, we actually send that around to the whole group. So there's a lot of camaraderie. You exchange a property, there's an email goes around to say, like, 21 Smith Street, you know, Kensington's exchanged today. So an email then forms off that, a cultural email, which is really good. So I'm suggesting things like that should happen. We've installed recently, give you some ideas for culture, a whip on Saturday. So for argument's sake, with the sales team and property management, new business PM, like we'll start one email, sales manager will send one email saying how was today to the whole group, then everyone will reply all and tell everyone how their day was. You know, I had six people through an open home on Tuesday. I had, you know, so this is culturally really exciting because everyone knows what's happening within half an hour of everyone's day. So if you're not having a great day, you had a poor open home or what it might be, and someone else is experiencing the same thing, well, it helps you sort of balance your perspective on the marketplace. They're little things that are huge culturally.
Okay, so how do you keep the team engaged in sales meetings and make sure that in general your meetings don't suck?
My sales meetings are never boring, and I don't run them all myself anymore, but I coach. I can step in and run one immediately. And what I've always done, I keep them 1 hour. So here's my tip. I keep them 1 hour. I keep them really fast. So what we do is we have there's always a video to start, like of something, 2 or 3 minute video, and give you some tips on which videos to show. They're always motivational, exciting, fun. They could be something silly. Could be something that someone's thrown across my, and be like silly accident that someone had doing, and just to get everyone laughing, you know. But it's normally motivational. I love Robin Sharma. I love Deepak Chopra. Absolutely love Dr. Eric Thomas, that sort of stuff. Any of the transform stuff. I mean, you could put a 2 minute one on Claudio or whatever. There's so many things to do. Obviously Tom Panos is good. So just one or two minutes to start off. That's the first thing I do. Second thing then is we talk about what's currently listed on the market now. We talk about what is going to auction on the weekend. We talk about offers that are accepted in the business right now. We talk about the top 15 buyers that the company's got right now and what price range and area. We also talk about properties that are passed in at auction that didn't sell. And then we talk about pipelines. We also, this is really, it's a really inclusive meeting. So property management have a 5 minute segment where they get up and tell us what the average rent is for the week, what the biggest rental was, what the lowest rental was, days on market. It's an information swap 1 hour. We then talk about, now one thing I do consistently is before the meeting, I put things under chairs, right? So I might put a Westfield gift voucher, two of them randomly spaced in the team. And then when I can feel the meeting sort of going into a bit of a lull and people starting to look at their phones and things, I say, all right, everyone stand up, check under your chair. Then it might be 1,000 DLs or something, or it could be a Westfield gift voucher, $50, could be a facial to, you know, down the road or something, whatever. I just pick something with my team randomly and stick them under chairs. And I tell everyone to stand up halfway through the sales meeting, look under your chair. And then the reason I do this, I'll show you how I dovetail it in, is at the end of the meeting, so everyone claps the person that wins a prize, right? Something silly, but just to do. At the end of the meeting, I said, guys, here's why you should never not come to my sales meetings. You just don't know what's going to happen, right? So I keep something random all the time. The other thing I just did, happy to share all these ideas because the way you're going to see me is I'm very transparent. I recently, I'm just about to reinvent it back in. I got a chocolate wheel. I was at a fundraiser with my youngest kid's year 11 school thing years ago, and they had a chocolate wheel up on stage, you know, the old chocolate wheels, and the people were so engaged in this chocolate wheel trying to get the prize that was going around on. I sat down and I thought, you know what, I'm going to get one of these and put it in the sales meeting. So everyone's looking at me in my team going, what are you doing? You're like, what is all this about? So anyway, I went and got this chocolate wheel. We got it online. It was a small version, like a little one about as big as sitting on this table. Got all these numbers. And I put a prize coordinating to those numbers on there. Now, what we did at the end of the sales meeting, if you had listed a property or you had sold a property that week and you had full VPA, vendor paid advertising, and you had a commission rate above, in our business, above 2%, or above, you got to spin that wheel and there were prizes on it. So everyone wanted to spin this wheel every week because it was the most amazing thing culturally, because I've just opened a new office and everything. I haven't reset it back up again, but I'll do it. the culture that that brings. So you've got a big prize, might be like the biggest prize I had on there was like $200 Westfield gift voucher. They're all minutia type things, but, you know, 500 DLs, 1,000 DLs, you know, it could be half a page editorial in the local paper. It could be up a page sort of from personal marketing in the local paper. We had, you know, free coffees for the week from the cafe across the road, all little things. But it's amazing, the agents, and the reason I did it at the end of the sales meetings, everyone had to wait through the sales meeting and not leave. If you left the sales meeting, you don't get to spin. That's the rules. So culturally, the clapping and cheering and stuff that that goes on around something stupid. Now, I don't mind if you have three or four on your sales team, you can still do that. You can build a culture. If you've got three people, two people, you can include PM in it like we did. PM got to spin if they leased a property for above $500 a week, that sort of thing. For above $1,000 a week. Everything for $1,000, they got a spin. So like all this type of things. We had all these little fun things that were happening. So they all build culture. They're little things, but they build culture. You got to keep mixing it up. I'll tell you the thing that drives my meetings is my energy. If I'm flat as a biscuit with a black cloud over my head and I walk into the meeting, the meeting's going to be shite. And I'm never flat, because going into a meeting, part of my ritual is I pump usually some good tunes in the car on the way in. I usually get my kids' playlist because mine is too old. So I get the good funky stuff and I just blast it, literally. And I get in there, I have a few coffees, I get in early. I'm always in half an hour before a sales meeting because I'm preparing and I'm getting a sense of the people coming in and how they're feeling. That's really critical. You have to think in this business.
What do you think is the best day to run team meetings?
I do them on a Tuesday. And the reason I do that is everyone seems to be really busy on a Monday. It just seems to be everyone's too busy doing opens and doing callbacks from opens or whatever. I mean, I'm also been pushing my team to do callbacks on Saturdays. Now, I reckon Monday's too late in this world. You're missing business if you're doing callbacks on Monday, incidentally, in my personal opinion. The other thing culturally... We do a lot of the things like one day I'll just go and randomly get a whole lot of cupcakes, walk in the office and stop everyone working. So I walk in and say, I could decide, all right, this Friday I'm going to do it. So I'll get my team to manage to get all the cupcakes delivered at, say, 11 o'clock. And I'll just say, everybody stop and come and get a cupcake. So in my current office at the moment, I've got 35 people sitting in one in the sales team and about 15. So there's 50 people in the current office, one of my offices. So when you stop the engine for 1 hour and everyone just sits around and has a cupcake, I cannot believe what people think. They all come up to me and go, I really appreciate, thank you so much. I mean, a $3 cupcake buys a lot of currency, guys. It's quite interesting. I get good cupcakes too. You know, there's a place I get them from in Sydney called Sparkles Cupcake. If you just look on the web, you'll get a sense of like they're quite funky. You know, they make like they're really good looking cupcakes, if that makes sense. So, and they got their little menu that you pick which one, the flavours and all that. So they're not, you know, it's just that something I do because if I'm going to do it, I like to do it right. You know, I spend a few bucks on it, but then it's a bit better than just sort of putting some, just a ordinary bunch of cakes on the table sort of thing. Not that it's just something, I'm not doing it like a lot of time, so it will cost a few dollars, but it's worthwhile doing.
Okay, Matt, so how do you blend older and younger team members and make sure that they all get something of value from each other?
It's a really good question, and it's really actually easy to deal with because when I've got the newer sort of younger agents coming in, what I often say to them is, you know, work with the tribal elders. I call them tribal elders. You know, that's a sort of respectful way of... And when I talk to the older... experienced agents, I call them tribal elders, but I say, guys, your part of your job is to bring the new crew through. That's part of your, because what I get the older experienced agents to do is put their arm around the younger ones rather than trying to say, oh, that's not right. Embrace the change. I've learnt the most things out of my kids in the last sort of 10 years because my kids are on Instagram, and I was just saying to my dad the other day, it was over for Father's Day, I said to my dad, hey, Dad, do you realise, like Luke and Emma are my kids, 19 and 17, I said, do you realise my kids have actually never read a newspaper in their life? And he was looking at me because he's 80. He's going, I can't believe that. I said, yeah, they've never read a newspaper. So the 19-year-old son's never picked up a newspaper. I mean, it's just hard when you sort of start thinking of what you can learn off the younger people in terms of trends. Because I need to know if I'm going to be selling real estate in 10 years' time to my son, he's a buyer, he won't be looking in the newspaper. Think about it. So, you know, you start to sort of learn. So the older crew have got to be coached that they're going to learn a lot off the new crew, and the new crew have got to be coached that they can learn a lot off the old crew.
Okay, so we've talked about large team meetings and how to make sure they are successful for everyone. What would you do if you were starting out again and only had a small team?
So twice a week with a team of that size, I used to have what we called a hot topics, and three of us just used to get lunch. And we'd literally sit down and we'd just talk about challenges between the three of us. So, you know, what did you have? I mean, I actually had four at that table at the time. It grew pretty quickly. But when it was only a small, intimate group, we used to just sit down and talk about each other's challenges. And that was so good culturally because I think we're ahead of the game then just by accident, because I've always been somebody who wants to learn other people's challenges because they're probably the same as mine. And they normally are. We've all got the same challenges, you know. And one of my favourite sayings is agents think they've got a lot of problems and they're the only ones with the issues and everything. But one of my favourite sayings, if all of us sat around a table and threw our problems in the middle, you would all probably take your own quickly back when you see what other problems people have got, you know. So I think that's one thing to think about because, you know, everyone thinks they've got a big issue here. You'll find someone else has got bigger issues, you know, sort of thing. So with a small group, to keep intimate but keep excited about everything, your team a bit like the SWAT team rather than the police force. Does that make sense? So does everyone know about the SWAT team, how they sort of operate? They've got each other's back. They don't go into buildings unless they're all in alignment. They train together all the time. They move in a pack everywhere. They eat, basically breathe, sleep, drink, do everything together. And it's easy in a smaller team to actually have a really good culture because you sort of got each other and you don't have this extra whole lot of people around. Like even though I've got 50 sort of in my team, but I've actually got like 80 because a lot of them have got assistants and all that. So it starts sort of going out and out and out and out and out. And you don't get to, I can get to the individual agent, not always can get to the assistant or whatever. So it's hard to keep culture. When you're small, it's probably a lot easier job.
What do you think of the idea of having monthly staff parties or dinners?
I wouldn't do the dinners all the time, I think, because that'll get too repetitive. I'd make them special, make them really good, but make them special. So instead of going every month, do them once every 6 months. And then I'd probably do something more like regularly twice a week around that table, around what's working, what's not working. That's probably one of my favourite questions in the last 30 years of real estate. What's working? Tell me what's working. Tell me what's not working. Because if I get everyone around the room to tell me what's working, there's some really good ideas come out of that. If I get everyone to tell me what's not working, probably 50% of the room's got that same issue. And culturally, it helps me understand what's not working so I can fix it.
Okay, let's move on to larger offices now or groups with multiple offices. How do you encourage shared goals within the group?
Every day I'd be sending a leaderboard around on that goal to the entire team so they can keep looking at it. So when I say death by score, but I've got a program which I haven't reset it up where I am because, as I said, I just moved into a new office. I will be. It sprays onto the wall from a projector. Every single agent in the business, it sprays on there where they are in terms of the gross commission income on the ladder. It also shows number of sales. It shows exchanges, exchange list. It's literally, just imagine it's sprayed up here behind me. Yep, that's it. And I'd look to put that in every office on a wall somewhere. I'm going to be doing that. I've just got to get back to doing it because we're just opening some new offices at the moment. And you don't, because the agents hate walking past that and see themselves down the bottom, one. Two, if you're property management, same thing. You don't like seeing no new business leases or leased properties not leased or whatever. And then if you have a common goal and you can have a ticker, like, you know, a ticker that runs on the bottom of the screen, like CNN saying another property sold today, 80 is the goal, and you're at 60, 61, 62, 63, heading to one. and just reminding everyone, remember, guys, when we get to 80, we're going whatever it is to wherever it is. But if you don't measure it, you see, what gets measured gets actioned. You want to write that down, guys. What gets measured gets actioned. If you're not measuring numbers, they're not going to get monitored. If they're not monitored, they're not going to get actioned. So I would have a scoreboard going around all the seven offices to every single person in the office, and it could be introducing a scoreboard to see where. Now, when I bought that scoreboard in, a couple of the agents said to me, "Oh, I don't want to be on there. I don't want to." I said to them, "Why?" I said, "It'll help you actually understand where everyone is and what's possible for you." "Oh no, I don't want to be on there." Go to the top three agents and see if they don't want to be on there, right? They all want to be on it. Everyone wants to be on it when you're at the top. When you're at the bottom, no one wants to know about it, right? But what it does culturally is, we used to have a sale, like I said, it'd flash up and have a sale sold, property sold today. So when that property had sold, all the other agents in the office would go to that agent. "Oh, you sold it. Tell us about it." Because it was real time. I had it working on real time, which the same thing. So if you don't have the technology to do these things, it's not a big deal. You just manually send it around. It's pretty easy, yeah? Someone front office could monitor it, and then they could just take it off a daily sales report or something and then send that around. But you've really got to get it out there to everyone.
Interesting question here. What are your thoughts on salespeople in the same group using different CRM systems?
You know, it's a really good question, because I get asked that everywhere across Australia or I've ever been to doing any coaching. There seems to be, the principals seem to have a issue around agents having their own CRMs. I think personally, for me, I have no issue with it. What I do want to do is, I do want to manage the buyer database, because that's what's important for the clients. Our vendors, when you do things, you've got to make a decision what's important for the clients that you represent. It's important we share buyer inquiry. We all agree on that, because that's what's going to help us move properties faster. Do I want to actually copy and control my agents' pipelines? No. That's my opinion. I'm an agent myself, have been selling real estate for 25 years. There seems to be a demarcation line along agents these days, where that's my data and you know, they're my pipelines, and I'm a contractor. A lot of agents are contractors now, so they're on commission only. They don't get paid. They see that as their superannuation, I guess, is their database, and they don't want to share that with anyone. I see that. I understand it. This thing about when an agent leaves a business, then you get another agent to ring that person's database. There's no relationship. It's silly, you know. Like, it's a relationship business. It's not a postcode one. It's not about where they were. It's all about relationships, this business.
Okay, so for hot buyers, it's okay to have your own system, but for buyers that are just looking, they should go onto a shared CRM.
Absolutely. So I encourage them to work with 15 hot buyers, and I don't expect them to put those hot buyers in the system, because the hot buyers are people that are going to sell in the next month to two. So they're sort of their pipelines. I'm suggesting they put the buyers in there that they've got nothing to show them, or they haven't got a listing for them. They're the ones I want them to put in the buyer database, because you're not going to get an agent to put their hot buyer in. It just missed out on an auction who's, they're going to list their house. They're not going to want them to go in and be, you know, taken through 20 other agents. And then potentially they want to service that. And we should all be working with, you know, 10 to 15 hot buyers all the time.
All right, next question, Matt. How often should I hold one-to-ones? Is weekly enough?
Once a week's, in my opinion, is too often. I'd be doing them once a month, but I'd be making them meaningful. I'd be going through their pipelines. So this is what I'd be doing, a one-on-one. The first question when I always sit down and do a one-on-one with anyone, is the first question I ask before anything is not real estate related. It's, how's life? That's my favourite question. So, and then I just don't say anything. I just look at the person, and then I just get a sense of what's coming back. If I get slumped shoulders, or I get black clouds, if I get, sometimes I'll get, you know, like, amazing is the answer, or had my best week ever, or actually not really good. And I'll find out first. The problem with a lot of our leaders in our business, they're just not interested in the person. I'm only interested in the person. I don't want to know about their pipeline. I don't want to know, because if they're not right in the head, something's happening outside of work. Doesn't matter what they're doing inside of work. Oh, they could have 10 leads. They're going to lose them all because their head's not in the right space. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the first question I ask, and you might change that. This is the way I like it. I just say, so how's life? Talk to me. Tell me what's happening. And then I just listen. They've got to tell me something, right? It could be, oh, I just lost 2 listings, whatever. Okay, tell me about that. What happened, you know? Then I might say to them, I don't do this so much anymore because I've got sales managers and stuff now, but when I used to run the entire, I had 300 agents underneath me at McGrath, built up from 15. Over the last 15 years, opened up in 3 different states. And one of my real successful things I think I did was, even though I had sales managers in every offices, I used to still go and do one-on-ones because it kept me on the ground, understanding where the problems were. And I'm still doing it now. I just don't do it as frequently because I've got a lot of things happening. But I still will. I mean, I'll do it. I'll just roll over. One thing I do as a leader, I don't actually have a desk in any office. So I've got Bondi at the moment, Lower North Shore. I'm just opening in Broadbeach. We're in Annandale, just to give you a nice insight. So I'm everywhere, and I'm not actually sitting at any desk. And what that forces me to do is I actually walk into the office every day, and I actually walk around and see everyone. So I'm still doing one-on-ones anyway, really. I'm just asking them, if someone's had one of my agents last night sold a property $100,000 over what the owner wanted before auction, the owner sent me a reference. So I went in the office this morning. First thing I did was went up. He was actually in there. Went up and saw him. Said, how good's that? Tell me about it. That's great. What are you going to do to leverage it? Can you get a video testimony? I'm pushing him to do things he was never thinking of. I said, go and get the owner and get a video testimony. Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Great idea. I said, how can you turn that sale into 3 more listings? What are you doing? What's your post-sale plan? So he's off celebrating, probably going to take the day off. I've told him to get back in. Like, you just got to stay on top of everyone. Because we're leaders, we've got to lead, right? So I'm not just saying, great, crack the champagne, go and take a week off. That's a great result. I'm saying, all right, that's great. So let's do a video testimonial. Why don't you go and, is there the buyers that you had on the list, what else can you sell them in the office here? Is there any other listings? Go back through the list and tell everyone the property sold today. Ring up the neighbours either side. Can you get a video testimonial? Go and see the owner, see if they've got anyone else that's thinking of selling. I believe that every single sale, you're going to get 2 or 3 more out of it. That's my personal opinion. If you don't, I reckon we're not doing our job right.
All right, so really what you're saying is you use that one-to-one time with individual team members to keep their own personal momentum up.
There's nothing like momentum, because what we do in our business, we go, oh, great, sold it over, everyone's clapping and everyone thinks they're a rock star. Well, I just stop and take a few steps back from and say, all right, okay, so we've sold that now. What's the next? What are we doing next? Let's celebrate that for 5 minutes, and then there's a whole lot of other owners out there that don't have buyers on their properties. There's a whole lot of buyers that haven't found something. What are we going to do with them today? So that agent this morning, he just texts me on the way here, and he goes, oh, awesome, the owner's happy to do a video testimonial. I'm getting DLs done. I'm going out there. I'm going back through the list. He's actually come back to me. I don't manage the office in terms of sales management, but it's just because I got just because I spent that 5 minutes, he now feels that culturally, you know, I've actually got time for him. Which is, I could have walked in the office and went, great, well done, see you later, didn't actually go and, but I knew that I could probably give him some extra punch by just testing what's possible in his own mind.
With your new role, you must be incredibly busy. How available are you to the team if they have an issue or just simply need to talk to you?
I would never show myself as a leader being not available. It doesn't matter how busy you are. Right now I'm here. I can see my phones over there, both of them buzzing, and I'm not just completely ignoring them because I'm in the moment here. Could you imagine a general in the army and their team are out to war on the field and he's like, don't ring me now, call me later. I don't care if you're getting blown up, I'll talk to you about in half an hour. Do you know what I mean? I think we've got to think like that. We've got to be always in the front line with our team these days, because what I'm noticing just with the new business I've set up, a lot of people leaving to join me, they're leaving for one reason. They're not getting any leadership where they are. we've got to show our team that we're in war with them. We're going to war with them. So what do I do on a Saturday? I could easily not go in. I go to opens. I go out and just drop into some opens randomly. How you going? Anything you need? I'll turn up to auctions on auction day. I've got sales managers and auctioneers there. I don't need to be there. But it every time I go to an auction, my agents introduce me to their vendors. They introduce me to the buyers. I pick up some knowledge and they go, geez, you know, it was great. Matt came to the auction on the weekend. Thanks for coming along. They think it's a real big issue. It's 15 minutes out of my day. Like, it's little things you do make a huge impact. I think we got to be more accessible than we've ever been to our team if we're serious about keeping them, because if you're not, someone else will be. Gone are the days where you see these old, you know, crony guys and girls or women or whatever, like, and they've got all their family photos on a desk in the office and things that they never used 20 years ago. I just don't want that environment. I want it to be slick, quick, moving, wireless. That's the way we are these days.
Do you ever work from home?
I personally don't. So what I do is I go into the office and meeting rooms, sit around. I get stuff done remotely. Sometimes I go and work in a cafe for 2 or 3 hours and knock stuff out. And I do a lot of my meetings in cafes as well. I think it, like, if I've got agents in different areas and I'm meeting them, I actually meet them in their area, in their core area. Works really well because they're in their core area talking to their network and they're seeing them, and I'm in there with them getting a sense of how they're interacting in their cafes. And I always get people to pick their favourite cafe and I'll meet them there. It's one of my favourite things. Where do you like to have a coffee? They go, I like to go down here. I said, I'll meet you there. Then I can get a sense of how they're interacting, and often I'll come up with ideas from the cafe. How come you haven't got your personal profile here? You come here all the time. The barista knows what coffee you like. You should have your personal profiles and maybe some cards at the front and all that. So I'll pick around on things that they can improve, where they're going to be, their second place of business or whatever.
All right, Matt, so you said earlier that there was a need to be flexible with people about their personal circumstances, but what about if you think they're just sort of taking the mickey bit, as in sending you a late night text saying that they need to work from home the next day or won't be in? How would you handle that one?
There's two ways to answer that. I would say to her, look, okay, not a problem. Just do that. Let's come back. Let's talk about it when you're back. Just do what you need to do. Let's talk about it when you're back. When you're sitting in front of her, then you can address it. You can say, hey, listen, whatever her name is, what we want to do here is, I'm happy to be really flexible. I'm probably one of the most flexible people around. However, when we say we're going to do something on a time, I'm relying on you because there's only 4 people in the team. I need you to be crystal clear on your time away because it stretches other resources. And I don't want to have this conversation again, those type of things. Always got to be done face-to-face. I hate things over email. Because people keep emails. They keep texts. They look at them. They'll bring it up again a month later. And they'll keep the text and look at it again on their phone. They say, oh, that was you. And it just becomes self-fulfilling. When you're talking to someone face-to-face, you'll find there'll be no heat. The heat will just go out of that conversation.
Okay, so lucky last question, Matt. How do you balance being a leader versus being a friend?
I've got some people with me 20 years. So I take bullets for them. Our kids have grown up together. Our wives are friends, like all that sort of stuff, you know. I've seemed to be able to keep, like, I don't socialise a lot with my colleagues. I do the normal sort of, I might go out for dinner with them on a Sunday or lunch with them on a Sunday, you know, as a group every now and then, but I'm not in their pockets. I do keep the line of, you know, leader and, you know, as CEO, head of sales, whatever you like to call the titles, whatever you guys are of your own group. I keep it. I'm never the last person to leave at a Christmas party. I'm, if anything, the first past person to leave. Awards nights, all those types of things. If you're in a big group, I'm the first person out of there. And the reason I do that is I don't like to. I think there is. You've got to build that natural line of leadership. Familiarity between your team. You've got to be really careful how you do that. I pick the people that I'm really close to, that if I want to share stuff with, that I know have been with me a long time, I share stuff with that's sort of personal, versus I would never share stuff personal with, you know, 99% of the team stuff, you know. And it could be just stuff happening in my life, you know, what I'm doing tomorrow or where I'm going for holidays or whatever. To be respected, you've got to act with respect. Like, so you've got to command it by not being, you know, like being the last one out at a drinks on a Friday night or whatever. If they're having drinks on a Friday night, I don't actually go to them. What I might do is I might kick off at the beginning and say, look, I'll have one with you, but I'm going to go and, you know, I'm going to leave and do something after. But I think that's sort of a lot to do with it, how you act. And you can be their best friend. I would say I'm a lot of their best friends in there, but they understand if I ring them and I have to make a decision. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to be put in a position where if you have to make a hard decision, you're favouring a friend in there, because that's really bad culturally. I've got some of my shareholders that have been with me for 20 years and I have to bounce the ball against them often, and I do it with absolutely no fear. These guys have money in the business with me and their owners, but I'm telling them they can't do something. And they're serious writers. I've got one guy working with me who writes over $6 million in commission a year. Another guy writing about $8 million with me. And I just tell them, I have to tell them what they, like, that can't be done. It's not going to happen. That's just respect built up over time, you know.
Matt LaHood, thank you very much for being a part of Transform.
Transform Masters 2017 is brought to you by Elite Agent, with thanks to Property Tree, realestate.com.au and Real Plus. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.